What's up, guys? Welcome to the show. Today, we have my good friend Derek Nguyen with DeSealed Concepts, and we're going to be talking about some sales and marketing strategies from one of your peers out in the market doing self-funding out of Virginia. Derek, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, John, Craig, thanks for having me.
I want to jump right in. I know you've been around the block and back and doing some self-funding and some interesting things, so we're happy to have you on. You've grinded your teeth on self-funding and sales and marketing, and we want to just talk about, you know, your sales process, where it starts, what you've been doing differently, and tell me about what your sales process looks like out the gate.
Yeah, out of the gate, first of all, I would say it's changed dramatically even in the last 3 to 4 years. 3 to 4 years ago, the sales process was basically, hey, I'm Derek. It's nice to meet you. By the way, can I get a copy of your census and start to spread quotes? And that's changed. You know, we've continued to develop and organize as a business. And now when we're going in, it's really establishing a baseline of, tell me what you know about our industry. Tell me what you know about healthcare. And let's work together to get some education going to start. And then we transition from there and we take them one of a couple of different directions down that sales pipeline by virtue of just simply educating them.
And is your conversations in those, talk to me about the first meeting and maybe even setting up that first meeting. What does it look like for you guys from a standpoint? If you book a meeting, are we having a conversation prior? Are we just going out to see them? What does that process look like?
If it's super cold, you know, if it's a cold prospect, yeah, we're going to try to breathe some life into them just by kind of getting a conversation going, getting some basic facts. If it's a lead or referral or something like that that comes on my desk and is just simply into the mode of setting the meeting, I'm going to start off, instead of asking them some high value questions, I might just say, look, you've accepted this meeting with us. You're in a position of wanting to meet. Tell me what you want to talk about to help make it worth your while. And what I've found is over doing that over the last about 6 or 7 years now, 9 times out of 10, they're going to give you the meeting on a silver platter. They're going to tell you exactly what they want to hear about, what they want to do. Sometimes that's going to be of high value. Other times we know that we need to pivot as soon as we get into that room to start talking about what we want to talk about. We know out of the gates if they're just simply having us in to be able to ask us questions and learn what their broker's not telling them, or we find out if it's a viable lead from day one.
You're doing that necessary to qualify, because I know we struggle. We fall in these traps of telling them how smart we are instead of qualifying them in that first meeting. What do you think has changed for you through your time now being in doing this for 10 years? What are you doing differently in that conversation to qualify them as soon as possible versus pitching?
I think part of it has to do in terms of where they are today. You know, most businesses, like we're in the DC market, and the DC market is probably one of the most vanilla markets in the entire country when it comes down to what companies are doing in terms of their health benefits. So that's a great opportunity for us if we're doing something different. That's the first thing we're going to do, is kind of figure out where they're coming from, where are their vulnerabilities, where are the challenges we have to fight through. The other big part of that too, though, is when you're walking in there and you're meeting with them, I've really kind of, again, pivoted to the standpoint of, hey, when we get together, I want to make it the most of your time. I want to help to make you enjoy this meeting and get a lot out of it. So I bring them value in that process. I'll tell you, it's one of those things for me. I've been in this business long enough now, and I've got a great book of clients. I'm blessed to have young brokers who are super hungry. And simply, if I get into that meeting and I know it's not the right client for me, I'm going to help to work to partner them up with one of the other brokers that are hungry to grow a career in a business. So we really embrace that team selling approach. There's very seldom a new business meeting I'm going to that I'm running solo. Like, and especially if it's a large group, I'm bringing one of the junior brokers with me so that either A, they're going to learn better, they're going to pick up on the cues that that client might have, but also at the same time, if it works out that it's not a client for me, it's easily a client for them if we win the business.
What kind of cues do they give you? So, I mean, everybody's different in the sense that, is it something they show you? Is it something they say? Is it something they do? Is it their openness and willingness to share and be vulnerable? How do you know you got the right buyer as a prospect, as opposed to a suspect who should be handed off?
I think it comes down a lot of times to the general intrigue that they might have. If we're sitting in that first meeting and they don't seem to be intrigued by any of this, I've called a timeout and said, we've sat here for a half hour. This is what we've talked about. Do you have an interest in continuing this meeting? And if they give no pulse at that point, then it's going to go one of two ways, which is probably right into a spreadsheet, right? They're going to be a spreadsheet buyer. At the same time, we get into situations where, you know, yesterday I was on a prospect call and the group listed 8 of their top priorities for 2020. And it started off with addressing their toxic workplace. And down at the bottom of the list was improving benefits and lowering benefit costs. And I said, well, wait a second, you've got a 32% turnover rate in your business, 20% is average. Let's talk about whether or not it makes sense to even focus on the benefits right now. Maybe you just need some counseling and some help in terms of your toxic workplace. That allows us to bring in those additional resources then too. So being nimble, being agile, having a diverse team has really allowed us to continue more of those conversations down a different path. Not just being a broker, not just putting us on a spreadsheet, but actually counseling that group and doing some different stuff.
And how have you transitioned that role of more to the advisor from a brokerage standpoint, falling for the trap and jumping to the opportunity of being able to quote with the mindset of, well, I can win this account on a broker of record? Where was your turning point? Maybe you got burnt out like most of us have and got burnt too many times on quoting for free, but what does that look like?
I think for me, it was a couple of different things. One of those is the need to go further upstream and continue to pursue larger opportunities. I'm not going to invest the time to do a 20 to 30 hour RFP to help convince the client how knowledgeable we are when it comes to using wellness to reduce costs. Like, that's not a good buyer for me. What I've done in that process is I've gotten to a point of, I had to say, look, I need to step back and take a look at this better. You know, if one of those opportunities comes in, again, we've got a team of young, hungry brokers, let them go after it, see if it works for them. I had to do it not only for my own personal sanity of being burnt out with doing some of that, but also because it's what the company needs to do at the same time. That's really kind of that turning point for me. So about 3 years ago, when you start to say, hey, how deep does this rabbit hole go with things like self-funding, with things like getting into advisory agreements and doing all this fun stuff, I basically said, look, I'm going to immerse myself in this over the next 24 to 36 months, see how deep it goes and see what it looks like on the other side. And that's what I did. And I'll tell you that in that process, no, I did not write as much business as I had in the 2 to 3 years before that. And yes, I did walk away from opportunities or lose opportunities, but I look back on it now and I just look at it from the standpoint of I'm in and the agency is in such a better position going into next year than we've ever been. Just based on what we've done from a sales marketing perspective, sales process, the knowledge and the knowledge base, we feel like we're just in an awesome spot.
Well, I got to tell you, you look taller. You look taller and a little bit younger. And your wife told me that you're even happier.
Yeah, right.
Well, we say you save a lot of time. I think as you get further down into people like where you are in your career, your time becomes limited. And you don't have that time to run around and waste anymore. So you've got to be cognizant of better qualifying prospects as to who's wasting your time, who's not, and feel them out better. We talk about that charging a fee or whatever to quote, things like that. But let's back up for a minute. I know you had mentioned before about sales process, sales management. How are you guys managing the process? I know you've got a couple other junior agents that help you with it as well. What does that look like when you're capturing renewal dates, you're calling? What does your process look like?
Yeah, so we've got a few different channels we're running on that on the agency side. So on the BBG side, we're doing a few different things. One of those is we just have a steady budget of telemarketing. And the telemarketing is mostly just out there to help set meetings and see what we can pop from that. You know, as you know, with telemarketing, you're going to see pretty limited results, but we catalog all of those leads as they come in and we X-date anything that's viable. What we find with a lot of the telemarketing is a lot of people are lonely and just want to talk. So not all of those are as viable as getting them down further in the pipeline. At the same time, what we've done is
not on the East Coast, they're not. Nobody meets you, you're lonely. But right? But I have heard that in other states. It's funny.
Yeah, no, it's just interesting to see how it plays out. So yes, that's an opportunity, that's an avenue, but it's not the highest producing avenue. What we go from there is we start to talk about what we've done from an SEO perspective. So from an SEO perspective, the website itself has continued to produce not always the highest quality leads, but they produce a volume of leads. And that's not only on the benefit side, but also on the PNC side. So we get hits almost daily on the website, whether it's call-ins, what fillable forms, whatever it may be. Where we're going next is we're taking that to the next level through the webinars. So Jessica, who was on the show last year, earlier this year, talking about the webinars we're doing, she's really spearheaded that and done an awesome job. So now we're in a position of not only are we remarketing to current clients and giving them value in the process, but what we're also doing is we're putting people into that funnel. We are getting people to self-select into that community to continue to receive content and information. And that is starting to now see leads trickling through the back end. Those have been the main avenues that we've done that with, in addition to networking, centers of influence, client referrals, everything else. Those are really the areas that we're going to continue to focus on really going into 2020 as well.
So you're taking these telemarketing leads, right? It's the fastest way to get information, get people on the phone, get appointments, and now we're moving them into what, a sales management, a CRM, or, you know, I use a program like Pipedrive. You know, that works well to manage that process. Do you guys have something built out where it's like, okay, we didn't get them this year, but next year we're gonna ring them, or we're gonna now constantly drip on them?
Yeah, so I think that's probably the part that we need to focus on the most. And it's one of those things, you know, a CRM, you've got to continue to nurture it. You know, otherwise it's just someone's calling the SPCA on you because you don't take care of your dogs. That's the way the CRM is. And we had some IT migrations this year. We have neglected our CRM completely for at least the last 6 months of this year. So going into next year, that's going to be a big cleanup process. And we're really looking to say, look, who are the most engaged people from 2019 that have stayed with us into 2020? I tell our sales team one thing at the end of every year, which is your goal should be to go back to anyone who is a viable, or at least gave a pulse or had a meeting with that you didn't get, or they just didn't move the ball forward, and ask them, do you still need help with your benefits? Simple 7 to 10 word follow-up, just to see what they say. Because what I tell them is your goal should be to go into next year after getting rid of all of the crap, all of the crud. That way you're not distracted. When you've got a lead list of 1,000 groups because they took a call from you or they responded to one email and said thanks, like, that's not a good list. Your goal should be to cull that list and get it down to the point that you have something manageable going into the next year. So that's one of the big things I tell our team. If they want to stay engaged, they're going to stay on the webinar list. If they want to stay engaged, we're going to have content, but otherwise get that list narrowed down.
Fortune is in the follow-up. Yeah, we would do a lot of telemarketing calls, and, you know, there was ones that we just completely threw out, but the majority of them was like, we'll give them another swing next year and see where they're at, because sometimes it just takes more time to do it. But I think you jumped ahead here to marketing. So talk to me, because you're a larger agency, you got 50 employees, about, and you've outsourced marketing. Talk to me a little bit about some of the marketing strategies you guys are doing, because I see your stuff out there, and where you're going with that, what you've had success with.
Nah, that's a good one. So on the marketing side, we try to organically grow a lot of our marketing content outside of things like blogs. On the BBG side, we are growing a lot of that organically. So there's basically 3 or 4 of us that will help to put together the marketing pieces on the BBG side, send them off to get polished up, et cetera. On the distilled side, what I'm doing there is, again, we're trying to do something completely unsafe. In other words, we're trying to do something different that's going to appeal to 10 to 15% of the market. So I've kind of gone a completely different direction. While BBG continues to talk about things that are going to appeal to most HR people, we're talking about things that are going to appeal to individual senses. In other words, we're trying to get them engaged in terms of bigger picture topics, bigger picture ideas. We're doing a lot of experimentation because, again, that's the goal with Distilled, is it's going to be different. So that includes everything from video promos straight down into the cartoons I've been working on. So we're going to see more cartoons coming out talking about some of these things, just to switch up the medium, the format, the message between those.
So I like that. That's interesting. So you're basically taking two brands. One brand is targeting one audience. The other is just targeting everybody else. Distilled is, because I see your stuff and I know the two companies. So that makes sense, because you're just going after that target market that wants to be part of the cool kids.
Yeah, it actually is your own A-B test. You can see which one resonating or getting more action.
Yeah, it's going to be two totally different audiences. So that's interesting. What other things? I know you guys did a big event and you had, I don't know, like 100 something people show up. What was the logistics of that? Talk to me about what maybe you did that worked or that you want to share.
Yeah, so I think one of the big things is, and this is a tip to anyone out there, is if you've got someone in your agency that really gets passionate about something and they want to take the reins on it, let them do it, because they're going to do a bang up job. So again, that's an example where Jessica ran with that event. Again, a little bit unsafe because, I mean, this is on the BBG side. We did it at the State Theater in Falls Church, which is mostly a music hall and comic hall, but we flew in a speaker from Australia. And we had rave reviews come out of that. We're in the process right now of tuning up our spring event. I know Jessica's got a great speaker in the pipeline for that too. The things that work for things like that, this is the first time we ever charged clients and prospects to come to an event. The first time. In the past, it was free. When it's free, you'll get 200 people to register and 120 show up. When it's a paid event, you get 120 that register and 115 that show up. That's really what we did. We did not charge enough to cover the entire cost. It was a nominal fee. We ended up doing that, again, in the spirit of bringing in better speakers, but mostly, again, to call that list and get a really engaged crowd.
That's a really, really, really important point that you just charge for your event, charge for the service, charge for the advice, charge for the consulting, charge for the entertainment. Whatever you're doing, whatever you're offering, whatever you're delivering, charge for it. Because in our space, in our vertical, that alone will be a differentiator, because free is seldom worth what people pay for it. And like you said, if they pay for it, they'll be committed to it.
What are you charging them? Just so the audience knows.
Gosh, I got to look back and see. I want to say it was like $25 or $35. Like, it wasn't a lot. We offered a separate VIP session afterwards, and they could pay more to sit and have lunch and everything else, but it was not a lot of money.
Let me touch on the VIP. So if you've ever heard of the Pareto Principle 80-20, what isn't always known is that that ratio continues to work as you go down the pipeline. So if you take the 20% that does 80% of the sales, if you take the 80-20 of the 80-20, 4% makes 64% of the sales. A half a percent makes about half of the sales. So that's why people who charge ticket prices have learned they can always, there's always a market for someone who's willing to buy $10,000 tickets. So if you're going to do an event, consider offering a VIP section, because that's going to pull the 20% of the 20% who want a special experience, who want something more, who value it. And so if you don't have the offer, then you're going to miss out on those people.
For sure. The one other thing I tag onto that too, though, is, again, this is kind of the fun part about how we've changed things up. In other words, we're charging clients to come to our once or twice a year seminar or event. But at the same time, what we've done with the webinar route is we are certified for HRCI and SHRM credits. So we'll give them their SHRM credits to join in on the webinars. But what we'll also do is, for anyone who attends, we will give them an Uber Eats voucher. So lunch on us, it's a $15 voucher. By doing that, though, between all of these things together, instead of having one or two events a year, we've grown our budget a little bit, but now we're touching base with those prospects and clients 12 to 24 times a year. By having this consistent engagement, we're just continuing to fill up that pipeline. And the number of return and repeat customers is insane, because out of the 100 that generally attend the webinars, I would say that 60 to 70% of them are consistent.
How many of those are they doing the Uber Eats? How did that work? I'd love that idea. Haven't tried it, but
it takes a little bit of learning. I'll tell you, like, silly stuff happens. For example, if I have an Uber account, which I do, and I go to use Uber Eats, it's going to ask me to log into my regular account to be able to use the voucher. And some people just won't do that. So you're going to see little stuff like that that comes up. But generally speaking, like, the people who've had issues with it, yes, they freak out a little bit, but they end up coming back around and it ends up being okay. We end up giving them a voucher afterwards or something like that. It's logistics. So again, you've got to have someone in your office who gets it, understands it, is passionate about it, and continues to run with it. Because otherwise, if you're an agency principal and you're trying to set up the webinar, bring in guests, do all of this stuff, like, it is just not going to work for you. You're going to get burnt out.
Yeah, it's a lot of our industries are probably independent, have smaller shops. So I want to flip to that, because I know you talk about reinventing and reinvesting in yourself. And I know you went out and hired some marketing. So talk about that, of how you're investing in yourself and putting money back into business to grow it.
Let me start with this, which is, it doesn't matter who you talk to. If someone's been in this industry for 2 years or 20 years, when you ask them what their number one barrier to doing more is, they're going to give you one simple word: time. Like, that is what everybody says. It's an issue with time. One of the biggest things I've done, and again, over the past couple of years, is I maximize my time. For example, I used to read. I used to love reading. I still like reading. I don't read anymore. I read maybe one book a year, but the rest of the content I absorb is through podcast, because I drive anywhere from 2 to 3 hours a day on a good day. I'm absorbing that content in other areas like marketing, like sales, like healthcare, right? Because what that's allowing me to do is that 2 to 3 hours a day, I'll guarantee you, no one else is spending 2 to 3 hours a day. If they have any kind of a real job or real role or real business, they don't have 2 to 3 hours a day to invest in that. Most people do not. So I'm maximizing all of that time on my time. In addition to that, the other big thing that we did is, again, a lot of trial and error. We have a lot of trial and error in terms of, hey, what kind of messaging works? What kind of marketing works? What kind of a presentation works with clients? What kind of a presentation works for open enrollments? All of these are different things that we've continued to refine and sharpen over the last 12 to 24 months that's allowed us to be in a position of feeling like we have a really clean approach, really clean branding, really clean marketing going into the next year. And all this is a rinse and repeat year. It's not a big reinvent year. It's a rinse and repeat year. So that's what we're going for.
You know, you have marketing budget, and what'd you do? You hired a marketing firm to help with some of this stuff and take some of it off your plate?
Yeah, so we did a couple of different things. So both BBG and Distilled have separate marketing companies associated with them. So on the BBG side, it's mostly the web development and web marketing with an ad component. Same thing too on the Distilled side. The difference is that on the Distilled side, I'm driving most of the creative work and most of the content, which again, that's one of those things that I feel that it's only appealing to 10 to 15% of the crowd, which means it has to be 10 to 15% better in terms of the content that's being created. So I have to drive that for now. But the web and marketing side, we do a lot of freelance stuff too. You know, we'll go out and we'll hire people, freelance video, freelance photo, freelance images and video production. Like that's really where we are at this point because we don't have a dedicated internal person. So we're outsourcing a lot of that stuff outside of the regular content and creative work.
The important message is they're investing in doing marketing.
Yeah. I mean, what Derek's saying is we've done as well. We have some people that, you know, now going to be full time, but as you get going, it's a learning process. It's a significant investment, and we've hired contractors and things like that, but we moved on to hire full-time people if you can do that, or a firm, because marketing is an interesting piece where it's so many different silos. It's usually not one person that can do everything. So you got to have specialists in each area. That's why a marketing firm typically will work better in that aspect. But talk to me. I know you had mentioned that book, that really good book that you picked some stuff up from. Maybe that was the one book that you read this year. I don't know if it was audio or you read it, but Eat Their Lunch. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So Eat Their Lunch, it's a great book. It's simply on the prospect of competitive displacement, which is essentially what we do, you know, is eat someone else's lunch. So Anthony, I'm going to butcher his name, in Areno. He also has a podcast called In the Arena. Kind of sounds like his last name. But, you know, he talks a lot about just that process of becoming a strategic partner to clients, becoming a strategic partner to prospects, which is everything that this industry was supposed to be. I got really excited when I heard about the book. I've been reading the book. That's one of the books that I'm invested in for 2020. A lot of great content, though, in terms of how do you move through that process to become that strategic partner. So he also writes the sales blog. So it's just salesblog.com. He's got content out there every day, too, but he's just someone good to follow. When I heard him the first time, too, this is interesting. I'm like, this guy had to have been in our industry, and it was actually close. He's in recruiting. That's how he got to start, was recruiting, staffing, et cetera. So he's dealing with maybe sometimes the same buyers that we deal with. I just think that gave it even more credibility to making a must read.
Let's finish it up here. I want you to talk about some of the things you've been doing with Distilled and converting from that brokerage role to that trusted partner, advisory, consultant roles, and kind of how you've been winning some accounts or creating opportunities that didn't exist before.
Yeah, we've done a couple of different things. So the consulting agreements that we've landed so far, some of those are just doing the same old thing in a different way. So for example, 5 years ago, if someone reached out to me and said, hey, I need you to do a benchmark report, this is a prospect, let's assume, I need you to tell me how my benefits compare to the industry. All right, yeah, 5 years ago, I'd probably do that for free. 2 years ago, I had a prospective client reach out. I charged $5,000. I built a benchmark report. They called me 4 months later and asked me to be their broker. In 90 days, I converted them from a fully insured plan into a self-funded plan and they're still a client today. So again, that's one example of how we started to do that. And I said, look, this is cool. We can continue to do this. Where we've gone from there is, again, age-old example. 5 years ago, someone who's in a PEO would say, hey, I need you to give me quotes so I can move out of my PEO. 5 years ago, we'd say, sure. Now what we're saying is, look, you can do one of two different things. You can work with another broker, maybe even one here at BBG, and they'll quote it for you, or you can pay me a fee. If you do the broker route, all you're going to do is bring someone in to trash your PEO and tell you why you need to leave, because that's the only way they get paid. You pay me the fee, I'm going to give you objective advice and tell you which one is best for you. And any client I tell that to, they're like, oh, this is great. This is actually an awesome idea. I don't know why someone else didn't think of this. The two clients we've done that with, again, converted from a PEO into a self-funded plan, it all went swimmingly. The last example on this is, and this is what we're continuing to work on going into 2020, is going into a client. We have one lined up, actually two lined up in January, that are going to start off. They were both prospective clients last year on the brokerage side. But one of the things they started to understand is, look, you're asking your broker to do so much stuff. Look at all the things you're asking your broker to do. How many of those are starting to actually produce results for you in your business versus make your life easier? I said, look, let me help you do both. One of the consulting projects we have coming up for next year is just simply on driving employee engagement. All we're talking about is in that is let us help to re-educate your employees on how to be a better consumer. Let us re-educate your employees on the resources available to them because no one is marketing to them right now. No one is telling them that they have tools, resources, solutions, whatever it may be through an engagement stack. Let me come in, break down your health plan, and let me run with that. I went into a business recently, and this is maybe a good tip to start to talk about with people. I went into a business recently, they're spending $8 million a year on their health plan. And I looked at them and I said, look, you're spending $8 million on health insurance. How much money are you spending to remarket that health plan back to your employees? And they looked at me kind of funny and they're like, what do you mean? I said, well, doesn't it make sense to maybe invest anywhere from, I don't know, 1% to 2%, $80,000 to $160,000 to hire a marketing company to remind your employees that they have great benefits and do some fun things like Facebook targeting to those employees? And the COO looked at me and said, that's actually an awesome idea. Let's do that. So again, that's where we're going in terms of some of the stuff too is, hey, let's take all these different core principles of what a benefits broker should be doing, because we know they're not all doing it the same way. As you move upstream, you have more options, more solutions available. No one or two or three brokers can do all of that for you. So why don't you bring me in to do one or two of these pieces and take it off your plate and give you an ROI?
It's always great to get paid to audition.
Right.
Yeah, no, I love that idea. I think that's interesting. Love to find out somebody that can do that effectively, because that's a great way to get utilization, a better experience for employees, but better results for you, and keep your ass in the seat a lot longer.
Right. You know, when you're talking to HR, I know this sounds crazy, but at any size company, they don't often know or realize this. The great lever that benefits offers in a 2.5% unemployment market is the fact that the employer may be providing $8,000 or $10,000 of income tax-free benefit to the employee. And if HR or the organization, as you said, doesn't know how to market that to the employee so that, you know, if you think the grass is greener on the other side, it would take $16,000 of wages, higher wages at another employer to net the $10,000 in tax-free perks you get here. They don't actually know that employee benefits are tax-free to the employee. And so I would argue that in many cases, you could make a pitch to the employer that you have it all asked backwards. Why do you have to charge the employees anything for premium? It's your money anyways. You just decide how much to give to them in wages and how much to take back from them as an employee contribution. It's far cheaper to provide employee benefit perks than it is to provide higher wages. Just stimulating a conversation around what's the highest and best utility of a dollar of revenue for the organization? Do you provide it in wages or do you provide it in benefits? And explaining the leverage that tax-free provides might free up a budget a little easier.
All right, so final thoughts, Derek. Anything else you want to share before we wrap for sales producers out there grinding on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, let me break it down for two segments. If you are in this industry, let's say less than 3 years, because I think last I saw, like, that's the average, at least, you know, a lot of times it's 2 years because that's when the guarantee runs out and they've got to run to the next shop. If I'm in that position, I'm going to tell a lot of those brokers who are less than 3 years in business, people do business with people who they like. So you need to grow a network of people that like you and that it's actually reciprocal. In other words, you like them too. Because that is the highest velocity way to grow a book of business when you know no one in a market and you're less than 3 years in business. For the people who are, let's say, north of 5 years in business, I would say the same thing, which is don't forget the people that you used to work with in those areas to keep those connections alive. But also at the same time, don't be afraid to switch things up, because at the end of the day, look at how fast everything is moving around you. Look at how fast everything is changing in the industry. Look at a year ago, where did you go to get your information? Did you go to NAHU events? Because now this is where a lot of people come to get their information, is venues like this. So they're moving faster, further, faster than anyone else. The people who are investing themselves into, again, all of these different items.
It's a great point. My old firm I worked for a long time ago, you say, listen, John, what you're going to see is clients start to look and smell just like you. We want to be around people that are just like us. So you got to come to reality sometimes. Like, listen, I'm not for everybody. My personality is not for everybody, but the people that like me love me, right? And then you start to realize, you start hanging out with some of your clients. You're like, this guy's just like me. Well, that's why he bought you, right? And even when you speak, it's like what Derek's trying to do is, like, I'm only trying to get 15% of the market here with what I'm marketing. I don't need everything, right? You could probably do less than 1%. You're fine. Even when you speak, you're trying to speak to just two or three people in the audience. That's it. Not everybody's going to like you. Don't try to be likable to everybody. It's not how Howard Stern made it in radio. So with that, we'll end it there. Derek Wynn, BBG, Distilled Concepts. Derek, thanks so much for being on the show, man.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, guys, we'll wrap it there. We will see you on the next one. Take care.